What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live over on Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and Twitter. Maybe you're listening to this later on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. It's all good. And guys, we have a great show for you tonight.
Very excited about this. We got a fresh one.
Yeah, we got a banger. We got a banger coming your way, right? That's what people say.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds really natural coming out of your mouth. That sounds really good.
Oh, cool. Thanks, guys.
This is going to be baller, I think.
We're really going to heat it up tonight.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, why don't we get into it? Because we have some amazing guests for you. And we're going to start it off right here. He is the creator of the new book, Blackula, Return of the King,
among a
ton of other things that we love. Rondi Barnes, everybody. Hello, Rondi.
Hey.
Hello.
Rondi, so excited to chat with you about all of this stuff. There are a bunch of books you've been creating that we've been absolutely loving. But I want to kick it off with the new one first. Blackula, Return of the King, or rather the kind of new one. It came out in January, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this, I've read a bit of this book, and it is an absolutely wild reinvention of Blackula. Where did the initial germ of the idea to try to tackle this come from?
When I was 9 years old, my mother took me to a double feature of Blackula Scream, Blackula Scream. And up until that point, I'd never seen I don't know if you call Prince Mama Waldy, aka Blackula, a protagonist or an antagonist, because he's sort of like an anti-hero in a weird kind of way. Mm-hmm. But I'd never seen a character of color sort of driving a horror film. I loved the Hammer films as a kid, and I loved the Universal Monsters, but we never showed up, unless it was for a second. And so I see this movie, and I fall in love with it, and the audience's reaction to it. And this was during a period of time where people would talk to the screen and throw popcorn at the screen, and were very engaged. So all of it.
That never happens now.
Yeah. We don't go to the movies anymore. So, yeah. But unless it's a Marvel movie. But I fell in love with it, and then over the years, as I got older, I started to see the more problematic elements of blaxploitation, the lack of a budget that they had. I just started to see the holes. And so as a budding novice wannabe writer, I said, if I ever got an opportunity to sort of revisit this, what would I do? And it always struck me, it was kind of weird to me that in the first 10 minutes of the movie, spoiler alert, Dracula turns Prince Mama Waldy into a vampire. And then we never mention Dracula ever again. He just kind of goes away. You have two movies now, and he never talks about Dracula or being pissed at Dracula or anything about Dracula. Why wouldn't he go after the guy that sort of ruined his life and, you know, changed the course and trajectory of his life? And, that to me seemed like good fodder for a story.
Well, so what was it like then taking this and translating this into a comic book? I mean, obviously we've seen vampires in comic books before, but you're taking something that was on the screen and moving it into a very different art form.
Expensive. that's the word that comes to mind. Are you talking about the literary rights, or are you talking about the actual doing of the thing?
I mean, I guess a little bit of both, just in terms of the process of taking something like that and adapting the property.
Yeah, I was. I happened to be talking to Alana Mayo, who's the president of Orion Pictures, who was a. She used to run Michael B. Jordan's company, Outlier Society, and I was writing a movie for them and a monster movie for them in New Regency, and just happened to start talking about Blackula. And it was one of those things where the movie had been in development at various times over the last 20 years and is still in development right now. But I had this idea. And I told her I write comic books and I'd love to be able to adapt this in some way, but have no idea how I'd go about getting the rights. And she said, let me look into it. And within a week, she had cut through a lot of the red tape. And as Orion is sort of connected to MGM, and gotten the rights for me, and worked everything out, and started thinking about the story in more of a now it's gone from theory to this could possibly happen, what exactly do I want to do? And the first thing was the look of the book. I think you needed a bridge from the 70s blaxploitation idea of what Blackula was to a modern day idea and look. And then it was trying to factor in what do you keep from that era and what do you sort of modernize? And I always liked the William Marshall, late great William Marshall, who played Prince Mama Waldy in the movie. Always thought he was the best thing about the movie because he took it so seriously. It was almost like Bela Lugosi in a way, the way he approached Dracula. And I was like, all right, the way that he spoke, you know, he was so eloquent with the way that he talked, and he was a Shakespearean actor, and he had done Othello on Broadway. And I wanted to write a book that sort of was an homage to him as well and the way he approached the character. And then also trying to be empathetic to the idea of a vampire that woke up 50 years later from the movies to a world that moves a lot faster with technology. Its sensibilities are different, you know, and factoring all of that into a larger idea than just a guy who kind of ran around the hood fighting people. And then the next thing was, who was the best person to sort of art-wise partner with? And Jason Sean Alexander and I partnered on Killadelphia for 30 issues. And we both know each other really, really well. And so then it was a matter of convincing him to find time between all of his various projects to come in and do the art. And I think he did a fantastic job. And the rest is history.
Yeah. It's really great. It's interesting to me that you're talking about sort of taking the Blackula time period and moving forward, because I also think you sort of look back, like the last page or two really feels like it's referencing like Nosferatu even.
Yeah.
Feels like you're taking in all of sort of vampire cinema in a way.
Yeah, I didn't want to limit. A lot of times, you know, movies like this, movies like Blackula, they sort of segregate themselves in the way that they're presented. And I wanted to bring Blackula into not just the modern world, but also the modern idea of he's part of a mythology that goes beyond just him. There is a Nosferatu. There is, you know, in the Bram Stoker book, Dracula was a devil worshiper. And there was so much more to the idea of being a vampire than just sucking blood, you know. And so how to broaden his world, both intrinsically and extrinsically. How do you take that and connect him to the larger idea of a bigger world?
Part of the canon. It feels like with vampires, there's the canon, the vampires, and then there's all the different sort of subgenres. And I feel like with this book, you're elevating Blackula to that like full on canon.
Yeah, that was the goal. I mean, the reverence that both Jason and I have for the character and just the mission of trying to take some characters, like I said, who were compartmentalized into a smaller idea and bring them into a much larger mythology. That was the goal.
Well, I think you achieved it very much so. I mean, I love the mix of art and idea here meet in this really amazing place. And what's great is the art not only kind of leans into the horror aspect, but the suspense, the way that we're kind of off and running in this comic is such a great thing. You know, you talked about the kind of the setup and the premise. And I feel like sometimes with a comic that can weigh it down a little bit, but the way it's just kind of like laid out and then we're kind of like off and running, it's just so exciting. As a reader, it really gets you excited for what's to come. Congratulations. It's such a cool look, not only looking book, but just like the whole premise, the setup is just, it gets you really excited for more.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Well, I mean, on that note, given that you're a couple of months out from the release of the book, we actually had a comment here. This is from a behind the scene. Rodney Barnes has created a modern horror universe and it's super dope. Is this in fact a kickoff in your mind of a modern horror universe? Is Blackula just sort of the tip of the iceberg?
Will it be super dope? I guess.
That's the most important.
It's already super dope.
That's always a subjective, idea. When I get to the point where I'm praising myself, just shoot me, somebody come by. that's when I know it's over. I mean, I think I would love to be able to do more with Blackula. The character doesn't belong to me. I'm sort of leasing the character from MGM. So they sort of play into the idea of where I can and can't. Everything I do, I have to ask permission for. So far, they've been fantastic partners. That said, you know, I love Monster Squad. I love the idea of what would Frankenstein and Blackula look like? What would, you know, the classic Lon Chaney idea of a Wolfman, and, you know, what would those characters look like in a different setting, in a modern world? You know, it's this weird thing, I think, sometimes with, I remember when Universal, I had a meeting with Universal, and they were talking about sort of not ditching the classic monsters, but they didn't know what to do with them, because it's weird. Yeah. A lot of those monsters were created in a different time, and tonally, they fit the time that they were created in more so than today. So you either make them jump higher or move faster, or you know, they run faster or whatever it is to sort of fit. Yeah,
we're not as scared of mummies as we used to.
Exactly. You know, you know, it's like anything that moves slow, you know, it's like, you know, you're not afraid of them in the same way. So I think trying to, you know, bring those characters into today's world and sensibilities really requires a lot of intrinsic work. Like you keep the classic stuff and the trauma that brought them into the idea that the creator had. And then you take modern day trauma and ideas and all of that, and you put it into their sensibilities. And so being able to sort of play with that world that I was so, all of this, I guess the secret, I should let the secret out. I'm just reliving my childhood.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I like from the ages of 8 to like 11, I'm trying to redo so that, you know, my inner child will grow up and somehow feel complete.
Nice.
Now, I did want to ask you, not to take a pivot here, but I did want to talk about one of my absolute favorite books that's coming out right now. There's the fourth issue is coming out tomorrow, Monarch, which is phenomenal. So good. I'm almost hesitant to talk about anything about it in particular, because one of the absolute joys of reading the book is we read a lot of comic books on the show. The first issue, you always get like, you know, there's a setup and there's a twist. And after that twist at the end of the first issue, you're off to the races. You're like, okay, now I know what the premise is. But at least the first three issues, it feels like at the end of it, it completely upends the premise of what the book is about every time out in a mind-blowing way. How difficult is it to plot something like that out?
It's incredibly difficult. And with Killadelphia, it's the same thing. You know, Jason, we're talking about how he has no idea where I'm going to go with the book, because I do this thing where when I'm sitting there and it feels like just a regular plot, like I'm a television writer primarily. That's where I started, was in television, and still I'm in television. And I always hated TV shows where you knew exactly where everything was going. And it sort of had this rote kind of plot driven narrative where this thing happens, then that thing happens. And just like Alex, like you said, like there's this predictable methodology that, you know, people approach these stories from. And I wanted Killadelphia to be a character driven story, to where you went inside of the character and hopefully you empathize with whatever the character is going through. And Monarch sort of has the same thing, except it's with kids and a childlike sensibility. There's a degree of innocence in the face of danger. And so being able to jump around at different kids gives me the opportunity to sort of recreate the story and to start over again and give each kid their own stage to kind of operate from. And to me, it doesn't feel medicine-y or syrupy when you're able to just completely dive into how the kids are feeling and what they're going through and just try to imagine. And again, to use the word empathy, to be completely empathetic with what the kids are going through. To me, that guides the plot and that takes me in a different direction. So the character stuff is harder, but it sort of informs the plot stuff.
It feels like it's almost event based. At least these first few issues have been like it's built around. And when you're writing that way, do you sort of put the event together almost like a diorama and everyone's on the board? And yes. Then you're like, okay, I'll switch perspectives, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants?
Mm-mm. Sometimes, if it's according to what real life is happening in my personal life. But yes, primarily I create a set of characters, and if a character is in a book, the character has a purpose. They're not just there to die, or they're not just there to feed another character's whatever. And I try to give each one of them a platform. You know, I try to give each one of them, you know, a lot of times they're all aspects of myself, you know, fears, you know, the virtues and the vices. And I try to build empathy the same way I'm trying to be empathetic with myself. I'm doing it with the characters as well. And so to figure out, to me, that helps me connect with people better / characters, if that makes sense.
Well, let me ask you about something that's almost the complete opposite of what we're talking here on Monarch. You've been writing the Mandalorian comic book, right, for Marvel, which that's a direct adaptation of each episode of the show and each issue. So versus what you're saying, where you can upend the apple cart at the end of every issue, here you have the thing scripted out for you.
That
you
apple cart is...
All the apples are there.
They're glued together. The apples are glued. It's already applesauce, man. Talk about the challenges with that, because it sounds like the exact opposite thing.
The easiest job in the world and the hardest job in the world at the same time. The reason that relatively easy, because it's more of, you know, once you've got... You've already got the thing. So once you have the thing... And you've sort of been, you know, you have your marching orders of what you can and can't do. You know, you're sort of in a place where, okay, I'm really just trying to figure out how to take something that's an hour and to make it 30 pages, which is a half hour in scripted television. And it's more of choosing what stays, what goes, or how you're going to, pacing is the biggest thing. You know, if you can pace it to make it feel like the same experience that you get from the TV show, that's the goal. You know, you don't want to focus on one thing too long. You want to be able to keep it moving. And really, the best part about it are the artists. You know, it's not really me. I try to create a map. But George's, Jante, and all the other guys that have been a part of the process, they really are the key to what makes those things work. And I got a couple more that I'm doing in the future. And I just love being a part of Star Wars world anyway. So, you know, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. one other, and I know I'm jumping through conversational topics here, but for those who are listening who may not know a little bit of your backstory, like you've been saying, you've been working in TV for a very long time, going all the way back to, very notably, The Boondocks is something that you worked very heavily on, which is awesome. Runaways, you worked on American Gods, which we love. Heels, one of my favorite recent shows. Winning Time on HBO, just about, like, that's sort of like the top line, some of the stuff that you worked on. Obviously, there's a big thing going down with writers right now with the WGA
show. What's happening?
They're just like, they made some signs and they're kind of like, they're taking a walk. This is a big deal for writers.
Really get it? Oh my God.
Writers are usually sitting down. This time they're standing up, and that's the big deal.
And that feels different.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Have you been on the picket lines? What's your
experience? I went out there once. I'm going to go out again. I've been kind of, I have a knee thing. So it's like moving around a lot has been an issue. Football has come back to haunt me, but but I'll be out there all next week. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but one of those things that sort of comes about every 3 years where you look at the circumstances, and I don't think we've ever gotten a great deal, you know, and you have so many things like AI coming in to play. You have writers' rooms being smaller than they've ever been. You've got many rooms where a lot of writers are being underpaid and their weeks shortened, so that when you get a gig for 9 weeks, you don't know if you're going to work for the rest of the year, you know, and so you're sitting there waiting. You can't take another job because they've got your rights. I've been in a couple really tricky situations where I've been in one mini room where it was a 10-week room. They were paying me scale. And I got an offer to do another show at my regular rate, and I couldn't go. and a show that was going to pay me for a year. Mm. And I had to stay on this show, and the work was complete, but they had my rights. And I've had another show where it went 3 months over, and they stopped paying me my regular wage and paid me scale. And there was nothing I could do. It was nothing my agents could do. And I was just kind of stuck in Toronto for 3 months. And so it's just one of those things where you can't do multiple things at a time, or it's tricky. It's so many things as writers where you're sort of in a position where you have to do so much for free before you ever get paid. And I don't know any other area of the business that operates in the same way being a writer in Hollywood does. And it's so essential to the actual making of television and film that you think we would be treated a lot better.
Yeah.
And coming off of, I feel like the last deal during COVID was one where it was like, we'll deal with it later. So this was almost like two back-to-back fights where we skipped a fight year. So it's why it's such a heavy, heavy story.
It is. I think this one is going to go for a while. I think we have no choice. I think a lot of the issues are the types of issues that are expensive, and they prevent the industry from doing what I think it naturally wants to do, which is embrace it the way it wants to operate versus things that are in the writer's best interest.
Before we let you go here, Rodney, I know we've talked through a bunch of different projects, but anything else in particular you would like to plug?
Wow. It's so many things I'm not supposed to talk about, but
perfect. But you're going
real
to.
Fast.
Yeah. Well, I'll do my best. A couple of books with the Big Two, more books with Image, more books with Zombie Love Studios, just a lot more books. I mean, I think anybody who is in the world of comics, we do it because we love it. And, you know, for me, that's basically what it was. I started reading comics when I was 5 years old and was a huge Neil Adams fan. And then comics sort of evolved as, and he did a cover for us for Killadelphia. And, you know, just being able to, again, revisit my childhood and something that I really, really love is an honor. And so I love being in this space and being part of the community.
We do have one quick question for you here from the comments before we let you go. This is from Derek Mainhart. Love Nita Haw's Nightmare Blog, another book with a cool 70s feel. Any chance we'll see more?
You will. She's in Killadelphia right now. She is part of the main Killadelphia book. And, you know, when things sort of settle down, because there's this big thing going on in Killadelphia right now, once all of that sort of shakes itself free, you probably will see, the odds are you'll see Nita again at home.
Great. Awesome. Rodney, thank you so much for coming on. We've been loving your stuff. Can't wait.
Thank you for all your work. Thank you for all your work, Rodney, and everything you do. We really appreciate it, man. It's amazing.
Good luck out there in the picket with your knee.
Thank you. It's a knee brace like Joel Embiid. I'll go out there and fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Have a great night, Rodney.
Thanks, guys. You too. Take it easy. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime.
All right, there we go. Once again, that's Rodney Barnes. You can check out Blackula, Return of the King at bookstores everywhere right now. Also, you can, other stuff we mentioned, Killadelphia, amazing ongoing series. Yeah. Monarch, fourth issue hits tomorrow. It's awesome as well. And the Mandalorian Marvel comic is coming out now, among other stuff. Why don't we bring in our next guest? Very excited to have them here as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming. Hello.
Hey.
Guys, hello. So excited. So excited to see you. So excited to see both of you. And so excited that you're both working together again. I know that hasn't exactly stopped, but it's always good to see.
Behind the scenes, there's been no break, but we'll gladly lean into the false drama of the reuniting.
Yeah, what a reunion. It's like a reunion tour. Back together again. Wow.
We see each other multiple times a week. We live nearby. I work with his wife all day long. But sure, reunion.
Play up the drama. It's like a reality show vibe.
I'm glad you both settled your beef enough to revisit this book. The reason we have you on, this is coming out tomorrow, is the first issue of Murder, Inc. Jagger Rose. Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know why in my head I keep going Jaeger Rose, like Jaeger Meister. But
you have a drinking problem. That's
But that's the reason we're having you on. It's a sequel to United States of Murder, Inc., bringing back those characters and situations. Before we get into it and talk about the book, though, I do want to mention one thing, which is we have one of the folks who watches our show and enjoys our show is a professional chef. His name is Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet. That's what we call
Stray
him here.
Bullies.
There you go, Pete. And every once in a while, he'll design a drink for the show. He usually curates a drink. And so he made one for this week, which is the Murder Incorporated, tying into it, which I got right here. It's a little rye whiskey, Averna Amaro, Falernum, Fernet Branca, lemon juice, and lemon peel. And it's very surprising and delicious, and it's a little dark and murky, like the mob itself, I guess, is the idea there.
Oh, nice.
But yeah,
can you pour that to us?
Absolutely. Yeah. I will absolutely
forward it to you. We can make that part of the thing. I love this. Yeah. Please express my genuine delight about this. I love this.
He's the head chef at a place called Couchon in New Orleans. One of the best restaurants in New Orleans, if you're ever down there.
I had my honeymoon in New Orleans.
Oh, cool.
There you go. So you should, for the second honeymoon, go to Couchon.
It's always been on our list. It's always been on our list.
Yes.
I'm hugely honored. That's a Thank tremendous you. Honor. Thank you so much. We will try to make those drinks. I don't think I have those ingredients. I'll have to go get them.
Yeah, you got to get it into the dusty, like old mafia liquors is where those are.
All right. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Now,
Mike, all we have left is our own strain. That's all that's left.
I have some very good ideas.
Yeah. Good for you.
Like the joke, but for weed.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's a great drink, and it's also a great book. We got a preview of it, and I really love this. This is just to kind of set it up. I mean, we mentioned this just before, but this is essentially a world that's been taken over by the mob. Is that correct, or most things in the world?
Yeah. It's a crime comic, full stop. But for in comic book language, it's an alternate history. Where somewhere in American history, and we do show you in previous volumes, and it was based on some true stuff. That's the other cool thing too, is that there were times in American history where the aggression between the mob and the United States government was so on the tipping edge that there were moments that could have happened where the mob could have put their foot down and really like challenged the government. And there was a couple moments, particularly after when Kennedy was assassinated, when the shit was hitting the fan, where the families got together and a couple of the families said, tell them to go fuck themselves. What are they going to do? All right, tell them it was us. And everyone get back to work and stop fucking around. Like, fuck around and find out, right? They got his opinion was that the United States couldn't fight everything that was going on, plus Vietnam, plus this. And if we push, we'll win. And if that would have happened, is where we are. And you know, it's so funny because Mike and I were for years planning on doing like a true crime historical novel. Mm. I remain obsessed with the true story of Murder, Inc., going back all through our history of American society and how we're, you know, the mob and America were built in conjunction with each other.
Hand in hand, sort of working together a lot.
Yeah, and though the mob keeps like rebranding and calling themselves other things, it's always there. So I find that absolutely fascinating. And I had originally sat down and really started working on a Murder, Inc., like true story. And a few things came out. Like, I remember like Frank Darabont did Mob City, which was like a true crime show. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it and it was really good, but it was like, I'm learning nothing new. I we know all of this. Like all of this has been told hundreds of times at this point in many, many mediums. And then Mike said back, well, what if the mob never... You know, what if we hit that beat? And he put it out there, and he like yes anded this into an alt history.
Yeah, the question was like, well, what if the FBI never came down on them in the 70s and the 70s and the 80s specifically? Like, what if the FBI hadn't really put the screws on them? Like, what would have happened? You know, because when we were thinking about new crime stuff, realistically, like the mafia is just nothing like it used to be. you know. I mean, they're on podcasts now talking about
We have them on next, actually. They're on next.
More like a ghost dog now than it ever was before. So, like, you know, to create a new Mafia would just be, you'd have to create an alternate universe, you know, because it's just not like, you know, the good old days or whatever you'd want to call it, you know.
No, I'm just saying, next week on Smartless, Paul Anka, who is Jason Bateman's father-in-law, goes on, and he's talking about the mob in ways they never talked about it back then. Like, here's who controlled us. Here's what they made us do. Here's how we did it. I was like, wow, they never talked about that back in the day. But it's always been a huge part of the entertainment industry and a huge part of the society. And we thought, what a great way with this alternative history that we built, we can talk about all this real stuff without pointing any fingers, getting in any trouble.
If you want to have fun, ask your parents. Like, if you're about our age, like 40s or 50s, ask them if they ever had run-ins around them. And like, I was talking with my aunt and uncle one day, and they had just started to them it was no big deal. They had a Mafia phone where the guys like paid them $100 a month in Kearny, New Jersey, to just use their phone at any time they wanted to in the 50s or 60s or whatever it was. You find out, wait a minute, like, that was in so many people's lives on so many levels, down to, using somebody's phone in an apartment all the way up to, you know, City Hall and stuff. And talk to your family about it. Like, people don't realize what great stories they're holding on to.
And honestly, it comes out very casually. It's like, oh, yeah, I went to a mob dentist for several years. Like, what? What does that even mean? But it's real. There were, like, shadow services for, like, almost everything, like you're saying. It's like, I had a mob.
In Jersey, when Sopranos came out, we started playing Six Degrees of Mafia, like, trying to figure out, like, well, I've never been involved, but, oh, wait, there was that time I was working for so-and-so, and then that thing was going on, and, you know, sooner or later you figure out, I was, like, 1 degree away from Mafia stuff, and...
I'm from upstate New York. My dad worked in Utica for a while, and he was like, yeah, the entire town was run by the mob for a while.
We can talk.
The whole city. Wow, that's how convenient.
So Cleveland, Jersey, Utica, we all have the same observations, and that was part of, like, just finding a unique way to, like, get into that truth, you know, was exciting. And so I was so grateful to Mike for cracking that open, because it just – from there, the characters went flying out of us, the world, all the history, where the pieces all laid together in the history of it came flying together. And it's the book I'm just so proud of Mike and Taki on this book. I can't even express it in words. It's such a huge leap forward from a place that was already amazing. So, it's great.
So from a creative perspective, you've done so many crime books where it's like the small, like, let's focus on the details here. And then this is like, what if it's all crime? So then how do you approach the story? Is it like much more top down and like building outward rather than sort of upward? How does it work?
Well, it's always character first. If you're not doing character first, you're gone. There's so many comics and movies and TV shows with what a world. I don't care. Like, it's look at that production design. Why am I looking at it? It's you really do. If the characters aren't speaking a truth, aren't speaking their truth, your truth, something that expresses the human condition, then it all goes away. And I always get that, and I'm making a little joke here, but as a fan of things and knowing what I know about how to make these things, when I see that essential part missing from a pitch, like, who is it? What is their point of view? What's their hot take on this world that they live in? There's nothing to love, right? And when I see it missing, my heart breaks, because I see all this hard work and beautiful designs get lost, you know. And we've all seen it. And the pandemic was filled with amazing sci-fi with no interesting characters, you know. And so it starts with Jagger and Valentine, and what do they want? And just you know, it's getting. You always go to the basics. What do they want? What happens if they don't get it? Why now? You know, all these things that you just answer those questions and you'll find yourself with a very strong narrative to tell your truth.
Well, so jumping ahead to this iteration of the book, why was this the right time to bring this back now? What, given that you had that first series, what was there more to say about it and what needed to be continued?
Well, first of all, we just love this. We love this world. deeply on a level that I don't think we're supposed to express publicly without sounding like a, I don't know.
It's right next to this world.
It has allowed us challenges creatively, narratively, visually that we set it up for ourselves, but we were able to like get there with it. And that's very exciting. It's also the world of the organized crime is something that weighs heavy on Mike and I, and this has allowed us an opportunity to dive in on levels we couldn't before on any of our other material. And we love Jagger Rose. We love her so much. We literally just love her and her journey. And this storyline takes her somewhere from the beginning end. So the good news is, if you've never read Murder, Inc. before, which used to be called the United States of Murder, Inc., but we rebranded because those are all words people aren't into right now. You put them all together. But it's Murder, Inc., and all three volumes are now available at Dark Horse, on beautiful Dark Horse paper. And this volume is the journey of her. It's a journey of she does something enormous, and that takes her somewhere very, very special. At the end of the first issue, no spoilers, we're heading to the Vatican to see what the Vatican is like when half the world is controlled by gangsters that come from the old world of Italian gangster world. And we'll see some huge changes that have happened to the world because of it.
Now, you had mentioned this earlier, but both of you guys are great. You know that. But the colors in this book that Taki Soma does are so phenomenal, over the top. Yeah. How much do you find, both from the writing perspective and the art perspective, obviously you know her very well as well, but how much are you leaning into that in terms of crafting the script, and then, Mike, for you, in terms of like doing the layouts?
I mean, I just know when Taki tells... when she's coloring, she's telling a story with her colors. It didn't come from a place of, let's just do this queer, crazy, color schemes. You know, she had a purpose behind everything. And she had never colored before either. We gave her some very vague ideas. We were talking about doing flat colors for a little bit, you know, cause we're looking at old comics and going, yeah, this is great. This holds up. Why isn't anybody doing this? And then Taki found a very specific way to express everything from greed and anger, envy, in these pages. And so when I'm drawing them, I'm actually not thinking what she's going to do, because I already know that she's going to follow the story because she reads the scripts and she knows exactly what's going on. And she's going to turn it around into something completely unique. And it's been one of the best surprises in my entire career, is not just to work with Taki on something, but specifically what she's doing. Like, it's one of the most unique coloring voices in comics.
Taki, are you in the room?
No, she's downstairs right now. Usually we're like side by side.
Yeah.
That's
Mike and
awesome.
Taki, for those who don't know, Mike and Taki are married. He loved her colors so much, he put a ring on it. And Taki and I teach together at Portland State and on the Substack, which we're actually going to be doing in an hour from now, cool. later. So Taki, on top of being this amazing colorist, is a full-fledged comic creator. She's an amazing graphic novel out from Avery Hill. And so when we're all together as a band, let's say, it's trying to figure out how to use everyone's skills and tool sets. Everyone, like Mike can write, Mike doesn't need me to write this. Taki doesn't need us to draw this. Like, it's all of us have a strength and a skill. And when we come together, we elevate. And so the way we do that is by considering each other's talent and what we do. I think about Taki and her palette with every page I type. It's because what part of the philosophy that went into this is we see so many films and TV shows just full on poaching the advances in color theory that have gone on in comics over the last 20 years. Like, you see a lot of graphic novel advancements in John Wick. Let's just say John Wick stole everything that was going on in comics years ago visually, and God bless, and I love it, and that's why I love that thing more than anything. But it does make you go, oh right, well, that's not like, they keep taking from us and we keep taking from them, but it's got to be an elevated conversation, right? We have to like push each other. So the idea was, okay, don't John Wick this, let's take it to the next level on that. And we broke it down to like complementary colors, like the colors are now broken down to two colors that work against each other. And that idea was to see like what other mood it could cause, like other than just full color, big reds, big blues, like what else can we do to create a mood and a tone? And that's the philosophy behind all of these scenes.
It's really awesome. Interesting to that connection to TV and film, where it's like, I feel like the switch happened from like production design to like color correction, where they're literally doing it like comics do it, where they go in after and change the colors to what they want.
Well, and I've had a couple of like privileged moments where I've walked into some production places that have nothing to do with comics or us, and I see a lot of comic book stuff on the vision board.
Yeah.
Like in some office, and you see like John Cassidy, Alex Maleev, you know, just like, you know, Darrow, like all these people are up there. And like, oh yeah, they're looking to us for inspiration because we are the no budget inspiration board. Like, you know, like stuff that's on our pages didn't cost anything. So they look to us sometimes with a lot of envy and inspiration. And when I walk into these rooms and I see, oh yeah, they're all over us, then it's up to us to like just run ahead of them and see what else we can find.
And then the flip of that is, I feel like in this book, we're talking about the color so much, but like it feels like it's almost like thrown light, which I think is a cinematic thing that we don't always see in comics. And I think that is a real separator here.
Yeah, I agree. It's a huge, that element has gone from Powers all the way through to our other work. Yeah. Like Mike's relationship with Shadows is something I admire, and it speaks to me greatly. Like it spoke to me like when we first met, and it speaks to me now. Like every time Mike hands in the page, I get that same like visceral feeling, and that goddamn, why can't I do this? And the, he and I do share and discuss a lot of philosophy about this and share inspiration constantly. Even if we don't have a specific thing, like if I see something cool, like look at the cool thing, you know, put it on the vision board. We all the time. So I'm like, Mike, please talk about this. I didn't mean to over talk about it. I'm Mike explaining.
We share the same brain on this stuff. You know, nah. I mean, Taki and I, every morning, we probably spend about an hour just talking about either story or art or color theory. Brian and I, you know, we have like these ongoing texts with some of our friends, other artists and creator friends, and it's just, we're always talking about, well, nonsense mostly, but then there's a lot of art in there, you know. Yeah,
sneaky in there.
So yeah, that's just our language. It's just our language to continuously talk about this stuff. And yeah,
I mean, yeah, I did blow up the conversation yesterday with the announcement of the Miles Morales Burger King burger. That did throw the conversation.
Yes.
I apologize for that.
That's
I
huge. So, Red Whopper. Yeah. It's coming out.
Yeah.
How does it feel? Are you going to be there for opening day to have a Red Whopper, Brian? Or are you going to go there?
Oh, no. It was so funny. We're a little light on junk food in this house because, mm-hmm. you know, we're Portland people. We're just, you know, trying to keep kids healthy. And, you know, it's a special occasion event. I'm not anti fast food, but it's a special occasion. I came down and I showed the kids and they all fist bumped because they knew we're going to Burger King.
Yeah. Well, we have to eat this.
But it was just, not to derail the conversation. It was just it's a very strange experience to see that, and then you flash back to your childhood and how much you wanted a Happy Meal and how much they meant to you. Yeah. I just can't believe it at all.
Well, that's why you get into the business, is for the potential Happy Meal.
I wrote to Sarah, like, you knew, and no time in the development in years we worked on Miles Morales did we ever say burger. The word never popped up, so it's the surrealist thing. Anyway, back.
Yeah, I can tell you that the whole time, Brian, like, I remember the early days of Brian just like, picking my brain a little bit about, you know, you want to create this other Spider-Man and stuff, and like, believe me, none of this was on the radar, you know. And I've seen some crazy moments from this hamburger thing, of course, the movies. One day we're in his office talking about Powers and Trevor Noah's on and he starts making Spider-Man references and then he's talking about Miles Morales and stuff. And we're like, what is going on? You know, never saw any of this coming, and to watch it from the sidelines has been amazing. it's, I don't say it enough because it's everywhere at this point. So it's kind of hard to say, hey, you did this, you know, I mean, you and Sarah and Marquez later and stuff, you know, but it's crazy how you can accidentally affect the world in comics without intending to.
Are we going to see a Bendis variant of Spider-Man and Across the Spider-Verse? Are you going to get a cameo
No. I'm very excited to share the movie with everyone. I've been helping when I can with Lord DeMiller, and it's very exciting. I can't wait to see. You know, when the first one came out, I was I don't think I was properly prepared mentally to fully enjoy it. I was leaving Marvel. I was heading into the thing. I had some trauma going on, and so it all happened, but I wasn't fully there. And so I'm so happy I get a do-over. I do. I feel like it's a whole month do-over for me.
Personally. It was such a surprise, like so many people's favorite Spider-Man iteration, and to have that be out of nowhere, and now you're sort of like, you're ready. And it's this also is such a Spider-Man explosion.
Now I'm going to
bring on the animation. And
also, the other thing is, it's Mike knows this, is my favorite thing about everything Spider-Verse is how many of our friends have been hired and have gotten gigs off of it. And it's not because of me. I'm not like, say, here, hire my friends. It's like, you know, Sanford Green is working on. Oh, great. I love Sanford. And so it's like all these people that we really like on the first one, like, after it was done, Bill Sienkiewicz goes, hey, I just did the poster for Spider-Verse. I'm like, I would kill to have you do the poster. Anyway, not to derail it, it's been a weird Spider-Verse day because we just found out not only are we getting burgers, we're getting tasty cakes. It's all
hey, wow, there you go. It's all coming true.
Get me a box.
It's all coming true.
It's all the healthy. When are you going to get celery? Yes. Yeah, something healthy in there.
But you know what's funny, not to bring it all back, but just before the strike hit, Amazon gave us a thumbs up on developing Murder, Inc. as a TV show. And just landed who would be our showrunner. And we were very, very excited. And now it's all on pause. So
lots of time to think. So, not right.
Yes. But also for those of you who went, oh, I'd like to see this TV show. I'm like, oh, go buy the book. Good. The book's out.
Yeah.
So excited for the future of Murder, Inc. past where we are even today because of that. So if you want to see what's coming next, check out Murder, Inc. coming out tomorrow.
Yeah. We do have a question here in the comments. This is from Ramsey Hassan. Says, huge fan of Takeo. Is there any chance you'd team up on more Takeo or another middle grade or YA comic?
Yes to all. Mike's nodding yes too, which is good. But for those who don't know, Takeo is a real family affair. Taki and my daughter Olivia years ago became very close friends and remains, now that my daughter's an adult, and they're very close. And I go to these Marvel retreats. I would like go for a couple of days. Me and Uncle Matt would go to a Marvel retreat in New York, and we come back, and you know, we're so home all the time. When we leave, it's like, where did you go? Right. So I was out with my daughter, and we were like having a little picnic, and she goes, well, where were you on Wednesday? And I'm like, oh, I'll tell you, you know, me and Matt and a bunch of writers, we get together and we go to Marvel and we just throw stories at each other. And whoever has the best story, we make that story. Right. So she goes, oh, you just tell stories to each other. And I go, yeah. She goes, well, I got a story. And I go, I'll hit me. She really pitched me The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Exactly. And I said, that's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And she said, I'll never forget. So she goes, with superheroes? And I went, I appreciate you trying to make me like that pitch. And I do. That's good. I said, but that I like the instinct to like yes and her own pitch into something that might get greenlit. And then she came back to me like an hour later with the idea of Takeo, which is two adopted sisters who get superpowers at the same time, and all hell breaks loose. And I was like, that's a really good idea. And then I'm like, did you get that from Mike Carly? Like I want to make sure that it wasn't stolen or anything. And no, it was an original idea she had. And I went to Mike and I go, am I nuts or is this a thing? And then he just started drawing it. And my daughter actually said, it's Taki's my older sister and I'm the younger sister and I'm driving her crazy. And I was like, I think we're doing this. And so we did a couple volumes and they did really well for us. And the only thing that kind of stopped us is that Olivia is in film school now. She's an adult making films, and it's hard to like look at 7-year old Olivia as a thing. And you know, so yes to doing more. We love the genre. We love the space. And we actually had a third volume that we wanted to do. We just got distracted by Murder, Inc. So a lot of times it's just a matter of, oh yeah, we did that and we want to do other things. And there's only so many, so much time in the day, but yes is the answer. I've written a bunch of it.
Were you jealous of your daughter's ability to get rejected and come back with a winning pitch an hour later? Because like, I certainly am. That's a skill I want.
I would be crushed for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, got it. Here's a winner.
She would have gone, God damn it. That's she would have learned.
We got another one here. This is from Michael Tillman. Any updates on when we get more Phenomena?
Yeah, it's happy to report. We're on board. If you follow Phenomena is a book series I do with Andre Lima through Abrams. And it's the only book I have right now that isn't at Dark Horse. But it's this wonderful another and it is YA too, technically. So if you're looking for more YA, this would be it, just not from Mike and myself. But yeah, the second volume will be out for Christmas this year, and so will volume 3 the next year. It's a 3-volume series, and if you follow Andre on Instagram or myself, you can see how absolutely stunning this second volume is. And it was already stunning. I can't believe what's coming out of this person and how quickly it's coming out of him too. It's quite stunning. So it's coming. If you want to watch it get made, you can follow Andre on Substack and or follow him on Instagram, and you can watch it unfold if you need a little Phenomena boost. It is I'm so amazed by Andre. I'm just like, I feel like I'm just holding on to for dear life to be part of the collaboration. It's amazing.
Not to take a swerve, but Mike, I just wanted to give you a shout out about Blue Book, which we have been loving. So good. And it feels like nothing against this book that we're extensively talking about, but it really feels like it's taking your art to a very different level and a very different place. The angles that you're using are very different. What has this experience been like for you, and what has it been pushing you in this way?
It's been really great working with James. You know, he shares the same love of weird, fringy stuff that I do, the same sort of sensibilities. But I think why this book feels different is because it has to be pure storytelling. And what I mean by that is, like, there's nobody being punched. There's nobody jumping through glass, you know, and those kind of action stuff, which I love, it's my bread and butter, does a lot for you, you know. But if you only have camera angles, shadows, body language, the looks in people's eyes to tell the story, you're going to find new and really interesting ways to tell it. And honestly, I'm hoping to do more stuff like this, more sort of almost journalistic comics, you know, very real life, because it does bring out just a different kind of thought process that has to go into it. And I'm having the time of my life on it. I mean, I'm very lucky that all my projects are things I'm absolutely in love with. Most of them are creator owned. When I get to do work for hire stuff, usually I'm pretty lucky and it's stuff that I'm really having fun on, like Cave Carson. But right now, you know, working with Brian on Murder, Inc., we've got some other things that we're working on together, like actively working on. And Blue Book, it's just having the time of my life.
I feel like once you've been doing something... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just to say, you know, I've known Mike a very, very long time. And this is such a good idea for Mike. Like, Mike has been to UFO conventions. He's like, and we actually put UFOs in Powers for me to, like, just give Mike what I know that he needed. Like we're on our Powers. Like, this man is obsessed with UFOs. And I just, and it brought our UFOs into the thing. I was reading Alien Agenda by Jim Mars to meet my partner halfway. And
that's so friendship.
When Blue that's Book friendship. Came about, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it's finally happened. A perfect book for Mike.
That's awesome. So good.
I feel like once you've been, sorry, real quick, once you've been doing something for so long, like you're saying, like guardrails or limitations, like this book has to be this specific, actually is the challenge that feeds you a little bit. Like, what are other versions of that you would look to for both of you? Like, what's the next sort of, like, I want to do something where I have to do it this way, or like where there is a barrier there?
You know, real quick, I'll just say, honestly, I love the weirdest thing in working in comics over 30 years. I've learned my favorite thing is limitations. Like, it used to be like, you want to have this mindscape that's just wide open. You just throw in all this kind of ideas and like, you know, just be existential and crazy and stuff. And like, I've learned the opposite, like in my writing. And I learned this from Taki, because when Taki wrote her book, Sleeping While Standing, it's a biography and each story is told in 4-page increments. So she had big experiences that she had to edit down to 4 pages. And that affected the way that I wrote, to just cut so much out, to just stay on the laser-like spine of the story. So that helped there, working on Blue Book, using just 2 tones of blue, basically. Weirdly, gave me the confidence now to color. And I have a project I'm working on now. Yeah. I'm doing the colors myself. Because of those limitations that I learned in the Blue Book, it opened up this whole other thing for me. The same thing with the storytelling in Blue Book. Those limitations have helped me move on to do other stuff. So it's the weirdest thing, that limitations, being able to force yourself to stick in a lane, to not say certain things, or to not do certain things, is weirdly way more freeing, because you become much more focused than if it's just this wide open plane of an imagination museum that you can just go crazy in. So what would that hold for the future? I don't know. I think Brian and I are constantly, one of the things I love about working with Brian, he's constantly pushing me. I'm happy to do what's good and go, wow, this is good. I'm done. This is good. Brian's like, no, what's the next thing? Like, we don't want to, he never wants to do sideways moves. You know, he always wants to push it to go further. Right. And, you know, between the two of us, I'm just excited about the next thing that we do.
So what Mike is talking about is, next year we have a book coming out from Dark Horse that is a sci-fi swing that is scary for both of us. We're and Taki's involved in it as well. So we're already a couple of issues into it, and it is causing us to challenge ourselves everywhere we can. And by the way, what Mike just described, we do in a friendly way. We're not like, no, do better. It's like, I'm actually talking about myself more than I'm ever talking about Mike and Taki, but he always takes it as it's about him. Like, I'm pushing to see where I can find new energy and new truths. But what I learned in that regard to your earlier question, and something I took very seriously, is that there's a really great bit in one of the Blade Runner documentaries where Ridley Scott is looking back on how, boy, I had no money to make Blade Runner, and it's my best movie, right? Wow. And he goes, nah. And then after Blade Runner, he was given a couple of movies like White Squall or something like that, where he had all the money in the world, and it didn't really land, right? And he realized that these things standing in his way cause creativity. Like, you know, like, give me a reason to be creative and I'll do it. Give me a reason just to be lazy and spend money, I'll do that too, right?
Yeah. So
I took this to heart big time. Like that's where the creativity comes from giving yourself, like, you know, lanes and stuff. And so for our new book, we have like inspirations we won't go to, because everyone in comics goes to them in sci-fi, like no Mobius, no Kirby, like we're like, just to like,
yeah,
where what else is there, right? And if the instinct was, let's do our tribute to Mobius, then that's what we would do. Like, that would be the thing. But we decided, no, we should venture further. That's be inspired by him, by doing what he did, which is go somewhere else. And that's our mindset with a lot of things, including Murder Inc., which, again, looking at The Godfather and Goodfellas and all the things that inspired some of the visuals, it's don't repeat them. Be inspired by them to find another language, another visual, and another angle on the scene that no one else has done before.
Well, I mean, tying into this discussion a little bit, I think as we've been talking around as fans of both of you guys, we've been reading through these books. It's been so exciting to see you in this really creatively fertile period, is the way that I put it. Like we mentioned, Blue Book. We didn't talk about The Ones, a book that we absolutely loved that was so funny and so fun and sharp and creative. Very excited about that. But, I mean, people always want to know, like, are you going to go back and do more DC and Marvel stuff? I'm curious, is that something that you feel a hankering for, or given that you are pushing yourself so creatively right now, is that the place that you want to sit in at the moment?
Yeah, I have to be careful. There's so many people like hustling for work, and I don't want to sound bratty, but I was on the hamster wheel for decades, and I was and I was running fast. I'm doing 5, 6, sometimes 7 titles a month. So like in that 20-year period, I did like 38 years worth of freelance work, and I'm proud of all of it, and I'm not bothered by any of it. And just this week, DC asked me to do something, and I went, ooh, the 22-year-old in me went, God damn, you wanted it. Like, 22-year-old in me wanted this email so bad. And I would have to say no thank you, because I'm doing other things right now. Also, I came from the very high class problem of my stuff is out there and it's still being absorbed by people, and the movies like keep the books in the top sellers. I mean, stuff pops up selling really well that from years ago that I didn't do. So that stuff's all still alive. So let it be alive and don't compete with it, and put out news, and putting out new stuff is where my heart is. And I feel I'm more scared. It's more scarier to do new stuff. Like writing Spider-Man again would be the biggest hug in the world. It would feel so snuggly. It would be the snuggliest thing. it would feel so good. And working the little bit that I've helped on the Spider-Verse movie has kind of like takes that edge off a little bit. Like I'm still talking about Spider-Man today. So it's like in my heart, I'm still doing Spider-Man, even though you're not seeing any Spider-Man from me other than, you know, the movie will be here soon. But so my world is a little different. So I'm trying to live the life of my heroes and do that which scares me more and challenges me more, and to do the things I don't know if I can do them. The Ones was something like I have never done, like a comedy. I've done stuff that had comedy in it, but doing a comedy was like, all right, Mr. Comedy Nerd, show them what you got
and give it a shot.
And I felt that way about Pearl and The Ones, when they come out, I have like real opening night jitters. Like I have real anxiety about them coming out. And I know, oh, that's the good feeling. Like if I'm like you hear writers talk about all the time, like the thing that's right up to embarrassing is the good stuff. Right. And, and knowing that and feeling it are two different things, but once it's out and like, oh, okay, that means that I'm in the right place. So right now I have the privilege to be able to create new stuff with my friends. The audience is allowing us to do it. I would be a fool not to take full opportunity to create as much new stuff as I possibly can. Also, not to overly answer the question, when I look back on things, the only thing I kick myself for is more new stuff, please. You know, I think about George Lucas created Star Wars because they wouldn't let him do Flash Gordon. And I tell all my friends that when they want to work on Batman, I'm like, okay, but where's your Star Wars? It might be in that inspiration to do Batman might also be your Star Wars. So I'm not saying don't do Batman if you want to do Batman, but boy, it's exciting to create new stuff from scratch. It's exciting. It's scary. It's all the things.
I love that. And Mike, you would sell out at a moment's notice, right?
Yeah, I just, you know, like I I'm not like, I know some people like leave Marvel and DC. They go, fuck Marvel, fuck DC. I don't feel that in my heart. Yeah. A lot of people are doing amazing work. I wish them all the feeling I had when I was doing it. I felt completely fulfilled. And I want everyone else who gets there to also have that feeling as well. So, and that's again, by the way, tomorrow someone like CB might call me up with something. I go, fuck, I have to.
Great caveat at the end.
But I will say at the moment, this is my journey is set for the next couple of years of doing like all our books are scheduled for the next couple of years. It's all creator owned, and that's very exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I love that, honestly. Like, we've been really happy and really excited to see the things that both of you guys are doing. It's just fun to pick up a new book for both of you at this point. Not that it wasn't before, but just seeing things like Murder, Inc. and Jack of Rose and not knowing where it's going to go is very exciting. Like we said, Blue Book, awesome. The Ones, hilarious. So this is great. I'm very excited, guys. I'm looking forward to more from you coming forward.
Well, thank you. If you can, give Mike Oeming a follow. He's been posting work on Murder, Inc. and Blue Book and all the other projects that he's working on with Taki and with other people. And you get to see an artist in the zone. Like, I've known Mike, where are we at, 25 years now, Mike? I watched Mike as his biggest fan. I can't believe the run he's on right now. It's unbelievable.
Oh, thanks, man.
Just that's pure, awesome. Beautiful cartoon creativity. I love it.
And I will say, to tie into this, on my YouTube channel, I recorded the entire process for the covers for all connect. It's a 6-issue connecting cover. So it's like 20-something hours of live art process. And I go over like using photo reference and
what a resource.
And reworking stuff and trying to connect things all together. And you just Google the name on YouTube, and you'll find it there.
Awesome. That's before I let you guys go, I do want to bring up one comment here from YouTube because I thought it was very sweet.
For sure.
This is from Stray Beans. I had a baby 6 months ago and I named him Christian, partially after Christian Walker from Powers, which I kept secret from my wife.
Well, man, now she knows.
Secret's out.
Now she knows.
I'm thrilled about this because Mike knows this. Like, before I had kids, I used up all my favorite baby names on our character. the names I really love. And by the time we had children, not only had I used up all the names, but then I had also tortured all the characters in terrible ways. So Jessica and Dina, like I told my daughters, there's a world in which you were all named Jessica and Dina and but I couldn't name you that after what we did to Dina Pilgrim and Powers. So I it makes me thrill that when these names find their way out in the world, and we've had quite a few Miles have come into the world since Spider-Verse, and that's kind of amazing. Yeah, it really is warm. It really is lovely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on everything. Brian, enjoy your Whoppers. Appreciate
hungry.
It very much.
Thanks.
You got
pleasure,
it. And
guys.
You can find us all as social media devolves into madness. You can follow me on Substack. Mike is on Instagram and a Patreon. And our Substack is filled with I have a new comic, Fortune Glory the Musical, coming out every week, a new textbook called Creation that's coming out every week, and our masterclass, which is starting in less than an hour. On Substack Zoom. So
get there.
Awesome.
That's the place to see us.
All right. Thank you guys again. Have a great night.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you both.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Man. Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming. Don't forget to check out Murder, Inc. Jagger Rose coming out tomorrow from Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
We'll be talking about it on the stack.
We'll be talking about it on the stack.
Let's see if
we give it a favor.
We'll be stacking about
it. Sell
them
down the river.
We'll be stacking about it.
We're going to be stacking.
Yes. And that was great. What a great time talking to them. Guys. Man. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. We are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
All right.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question basically wherever you're watching the podcast, except Twitter, because Twitter doesn't work properly anymore. But what are you guys, what are you guys drinking tonight? What you drinking?
I had a cocktail, which was Mezcal, triple sec, grapefruit juice. It's my drink of this. It's my spring drink, and I'm loving it.
Ooh, interesting.
That sounds nice.
And now I'm drinking red wine.
Excellent. I'm still working on the Murder Incorporated, by the way.
Ooh, that sounds lovely.
Yes.
So they have these things in Baltimore called crushes. I don't know if it's just Baltimore or widely more spread, but they have them here. And basically, it's a fruit juice and vodka.
The way you say vodka. Vodka.
Is that called a Pete Trap? Is that the name of the drink?
So these are, they put them in cans. They call them smashes. And they've got a little fruit punch in vodka.
It's like 10%. In Return of the Jedi when the meat was hanging and it was just a chewy trap. That's what would be hanging for the Pete Trap.
Oh, yeah. I'd fall for it every time.
All right. We got a question here from Derek Mainhart. Other than superheroes, what is your favorite genre of comics? Great question. I like that.
Great question. I mean, I got to say it's like crime with a twist. Crime comics with a little bit of an angle, I think, is like
that. A little bit of a lemon. Like,
I mean, the stuff we've been talking about with all the Bendis books that do that. Got to throw out, like, That Texas Blood has, like, it's crime, but focused in a particular area. And then each new arc sort of heightens and takes in a different direction. I've been loving that lately.
Pete, what about you? What's your favorite non-superhero genre?
I think Murder Falcon, I think, is the answer to that.
It's a very focused genre. Uh-huh. Very singular. Yeah, yeah.
It's, what's your favorite Murder Falcon comic book, Pete?
Murder Falcon. What was your second favorite?
Coming in second
is Murder Falcon, which was close. It was hard for me to rank those.
Yeah, hard to do that.
Do you actually have a favorite genre, or are you done?
Violence? Is that a genre?
Shoykler suggests rom-com.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's, you know, non-comic.
You actually don't really like rom-com comics. I think Justin likes
rom-com. Well, over the years, I have, become a little bit more like Justin, whereas I enjoy a good relish. You know what I mean?
In the beginning,
I was like, Justin, who cares about these made-up relationships? Now I'm in too deep. So, thank you for giving us a little bit more light there.
For me, I would say porn. Let's move on to the next question.
Not surprising. Wow. Not surprising.
Ben is talking about truth, being truthful, really opening you up, Alex, and I love it.
I think I've been very into horror comics lately, to be perfectly honest. Like, I always like horror, but there's something about it that there's been some really good horror comics. When we started out doing the show, there was like Lock and Key, and that was the thing that we called on. And now I think there are legit scary comics all over the place, and it's awesome.
Well, I think there's like comics like Ice Cream Man, but then beyond that, there's been sort of a renaissance of just straight up horror books that are like one-offs or even limited series in the last year. It's been crazy how horror's caught on.
Yeah. This is from Prime NRG. Question for Pete, the art expert of the show. What are some of your favorite art-forward comics? Step by Bloody Step is one of my faves.
Oh, first off, Prime NRG, good call on that. Mm-hmm. There has been a what I call a renaissance of non-words in comics, which has just been glorious.
Of non-words.
Yeah, so it's been nice to get let's get rid of all these stupid ideas and thoughts and just let the art do the talking. I don't know, man. I think that the Beasts of Burdens comic when that first started, and that was that was all watercolors, and it was such an interesting genre to see Jill Thompson, just to see kind of like intensity in a watercolor was an interesting kind of mood. And it really kind of took me to an interesting place. So I just think stuff that moves you, stuff that's different, that kind of jumps out at the panels at you is always amazing.
I would throw out, if I may answer Pete, our expert of the show, if I could jump in here. The first thought that comes to mind here is Art Brute, the W. Maxwell Prince comic.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not only using a lot of different types of art, but is about art. And I thought that sort of, while still having words, it's not part of the non-words renaissance, something we adhere to now. It really does like push the form, and it makes you look, you're looking at art, but also thinking about how art works on our brains. And
Yeah, I don't know if this is exactly the answer you're looking for either, but I'd say a lot of the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale stuff definitely leans into Sale's art. Like, Jeff Loeb tends to get very wordy and plotty often, but the Tim Sale books he does are the ones that just lead into pure emotion and the character and pushing that forward, and kind of like his words take a little bit of a step back there. So I always like that stuff. This is from Edward Doherty. The Flash isn't out yet, but why didn't they just make a Michael Keaton Batman movie instead?
Come on! That would have been fucking awesome. I would think that maybe it would be a lot of stunt double, not Michael. I don't know. I don't know what kind of mobility he's at, but that would be the only thing that I would...
He's in his 70s. He can move around, right?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, he's but dancing. I mean, 12 hours a day, you know, day after day, I think would get a little, you know.
I wish I could ask him if he wanted to get nuts and find out if he would get nuts.
Oh, man. Like, but Doherty, great question because that's the reason I'm going to see this fucking movie is because Michael Keaton is Batman, so it's like, you know.
Wow. Well, they got the oldest, crotchetiest viewers to come in for the movie via this.
I mean, I feel like the original idea was to get towards a Michael Keaton Batman movie again, like a Dark Knight Returns type thing, because they had him in Batgirl, they had him in The Flash, have him coming in The Flash, and I think the idea was to have him be the new Batman going forward in the DC Universe, so they were going to put him in various movies. I assume they wanted to make a Batman sequel with him.
I think it's a headline. I don't think they wanted to do a full-on Batman movie with Michael Keaton as the lead, because I think that that's like the opposite direction. That's literally appealing to people who have seen all the older movies. Like, I think that what they want to do is get the headline of that and have it.
How dare you say that? How dare you say all of this on Beetlejuice 2 date announcement day?
Oh, yeah.
Man, that guy's going to be busy going.
Yeah. I want to throw this out to you. This is something that Pete's going to get very mad at me, but I was thinking about earlier. And when I was thinking about it earlier, I was like, Pete's going to get mad at me if I say this on the show. Who do you think?
I love when I think that during the day.
Yeah. Who do you think is a bigger, like, I'm at the end of my life, let me just get out a bunch of sequels and shit or whatever person? Michael Keaton or Harrison Ford at this point?
Oh, what kind of thought is that? What the fuck kind of...
I mean, that's what they're both doing, though. Harrison Ford has basically given up at this point.
Go fuck yourself, dude. That fucking Apple Plus movie was fucking... TV show. Is TV fantastic.
Show. It is.
It's great.
It is great.
Kills it.
The reason, and he also did a Tyler Sheridan show, but all of that adds up to him being like, well, I got to get a bunch of projects now. Gotta hurry up.
But I don't think neither of them are like trying to make money. I think they're just people who are like, yeah, I'll do that. Also, Michael Keaton just had a huge win with Dope Sick. Like, he's still out there making moves.
Totally.
Birdman. Harrison Ford. We can go on for hours.
That was pushing a decade ago, I think. But I do think that Harrison Ford is like an actor's actor. He's never been one to deal with any of the bullshit. He's like, I don't know. I just want to do this. This is fucking fun. So he's still feeling that way, I think. Indy 5 coming. He's still moving.
Great. Good answer. All right. This is from Schweikler. Audience question. You guys don't need to title an audience question. I'll just pull it in as an audience question. I also don't need to read it.
Also, we should say, take a moment and say happy birthday, Alex. Kev. Happy birthday, Kevin. Come on.
Birthday.
Happy Alex, birthday, don't, Kevin.
You don't puppet loving mother. Happy birthday.
I hope you got many puppets today, Kevin.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Justin?
I know he did. I was going to say, you don't need to take something off your plate.
Audience question. What are some of your favorite recent throwbacks to the 1960s or 1970s?
I guess the 90s.
I assume in comics or just in general? I don't know.
Interesting. I guess maybe every person who grew up then and that's all they talk about? You know what I mean?
All the
like
time.
Like all of our parents?
How about in comics, the scumbag? That was a pretty good throwback to the 70s.
Great answer, Alex. I love that answer.
I think Blackula is a great example of this.
Recency bias.
Yeah. What am I, Justin over here? Come on. It's exciting that we're getting more of it. You know what I mean? And also, I love this new perspective and new idea behind it. So, very excited about it.
The first answer that comes to mind is sort of a weird one, but I would say Ryan North's Fantastic Four feels like it's going back into real, like, science premise-based storytelling for the Fantastic Four. It's all about them and very family-oriented. But a lot of it is getting into, like, very specific concepts, which is what it felt like back in sort of the Silver Age Fantastic Four stuff.
Our next question. Oh, were you going to say something else, Pete?
And then I'm just, you know, I'm very excited for the return of Disco. You know, I can't wait.
Yep, it's coming back, man.
Coming back again.
Coming back. This one, ooh, this is Poke of the Bear. I don't know if I should even bring it in, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Ramsey Hassan says, heard Jordan D. White give Pete a shout-out on iFanboy. Josh from iFanboy said he went to college with Pete. Any chance of a CBC versus iFanboy crossover?
Well, first off,
I'm going to just take out my headphones.
Okay, great. Yeah, first off, I listened to that interview and was a little disappointed in the way Josh dismissed me, like we didn't want to have history together. So that hurt a little bit. But we have done crossovers. We've had them on our show. We've been on their show. We've seen them at conventions. And, yeah, I went to college with all those guys.
They're your greatest enemies.
Maybe one of them. We have a little history. We almost got in a fight.
This is juicy.
Yeah, which one of the, those guys has a funny
It's the one that most looks like Zalbin, if that helps at all.
That explains everything? Does that explain everything?
Yeah, it's all coming together, man.
Oh, man.
Oh, cool. But you were most mad at Jordan, right? Was that the thing, Pete?
Well, from that interview?
Yeah.
No, what was just hard was, first off, I was really drunk when I was listening to it. But secondly, like, I was mad because I couldn't ask any questions. You know what I mean? Like, it was hard to just be a passenger on that ride because
that's like most podcasts, except for ours.
Yeah, exactly.
I get to be on Serial a bunch, though. That's the one exception.
That is crazy.
Oh, well, that's, I don't know what that means, but congratulations.
And you should know, if you shout loud enough when you're watching Ted Lasso, it does affect the show.
Oh, well, good. That's good news.
Those scenes where Jason Sudeikis is like, huh?
What'd you say?
What'd you say, Pete? Hey, Pete, this is the 30th time you watched this episode. Why don't you turn it off? Do something else.
Pete, please, for the love of God, turn this off. Believe
it's time to go to bed, Pete. Come on. What were you saying, Pete?
I wanted to switch gears, and it was funny because when we were talking about mafia stories, growing up in Rochester.
The iFanboy Mafia. Let's get into it. They ran a whole mob. It was a whole production racket.
I'm stepping away.
That's how they got the fucking money for their fucking podcast. The mob, man.
It's a mob cast.
I was stepping away from the question. I was stepping away from the question for a little bit. That's what I said when I was switching gears. I didn't want to tell the story while we had very important people on, but in Rochester, the east part of Rochester is called East of Rochester because it is crazy Italian and, there's a lot of influence. And growing up, I worked at a golf course that wasn't far from there. And this guy would show up every week with a different car. And he would just pull out this wad and peel me off something. He would call me Little Petey. Hey, Little Petey, take care of me today. And one time I thought I was going to get whacked because I accidentally forgot the make of his new Cadillac. And I put it in this other guy's Cadillac, his golf clubs. And, he called the country club and was like, well, fuck the Little Petey, put my clubs. And I was like, holy shit. And I was running around checking people's cars. And I finally found it. And I thought I was going to get killed. But it was crazy to kind of see that growing up. Like, these guys could do anything they wanted on the course. Like, they took range balls to the first tee. And
that's a crazy thing.
That's a crazy,
take range balls to the first.
I just want to mention, thank you for not offering up this relevant story during our discussion and instead staying silent for 45 minutes.
Well, I didn't want to, they don't want to fucking hear my story. You know what I mean?
What?
It's like,
of course they do.
It was a discussion, man. Come on.
But anyways.
This isn't I Mob Boy.
Am I Mob Boy? Good. You slam. Oh, Alex, you're sounding a lot like the guy Pete hates. whose name, as we all know, is Alex Zell.
Oh, yeah. I'm on both podcasts.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
Real quick, Derek Mainhart, I would love to read Little Petey Adventures. All I could think of was that episode of the Pete television show of him running around being like, the mob guy's going to kill me.
Yeah. I will say, just to wrap up this question, we like the iFanboy guys. We'd be happy to have them on anytime.
What a peacemaker.
There you go. Yeah. I don't know if Jordan's ever going to get asked back after that podcast, but I guess we'll see.
Wow.
Wait, what does that mean?
I love Jordan.
You were mad.
I love you. You were upset at him.
Yeah, I was upset because I couldn't have a conversation with him. He was bringing up these ideas, and I was just like, what the fuck do you mean, Jordan? And
here's what we need to do. We need to have Jordan back on to continue the discussion for the iPhone.
Yeah, I'm going to just be like, okay, Jordan, you brought this up in this podcast, and I want to address this. Yeah.
And well, I'll talk to the iFanboy guys to add one of those boxes at the end of their podcast where it's like, this adventure is continued over in comic.
if you like this podcast, you would like to hear more. Yeah.
And we'll do it on our podcast. See iFanboy 138 for more.
That's a classic to be continued.
Yeah.
Right there.
All right. David Quinley says, I'm going to parse through this. Spider-Man is Guardians the saving grace for the superhero movies? Have not seen yet.
Let me say, I've been calling myself Spider-Man with a lot of folks here. So this is a question for me.
I think the question is Guardians the saving grace for superhero movies? We've been discussing this a lot. There's a lot of talk about superhero movie fatigue. And is the superhero movie genre over? Is Guardians the saving grace for superhero movies? What do you guys think?
Well, it's the second highest earning movie of the year behind Super Mario Brothers. Good sign. It feels like a good movie. But I do think to say it's going to save superhero movies is an overstatement because what it is just a really great Guardians movie, which is like a good superhero Marvel movie franchise. So like it's not like this big audience expanding movie. If anything, it's just like a great successful payoff to the people who've already been watching these and have stuck with it throughout all of the movies.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think we are in a period, there have been enough misses at this point, at least in the popular opinion, whatever you think about the movies individually, that every movie is going to have to prove itself for a while. And I honestly don't know. Like, I legitimately think, and I know this is a very nihilistic way of looking at it, but I legitimately think Marvel is a place right now where they need to have another 10 years of nonstop hits with all critical acclaim in order for people to be like, okay, great, Marvel is a dominant force.
Well, and that's fair. Or
it's not fair.
Well, that's, but I think it's fair to
say. They have to have 10 years of hits so they can, people can shut up.
I'm not talking about how I feel personally. I'm talking about like the popular narrative, because what happens is through news reports as well as through how fans interact with anything, there is a narrative created. So the part of the narrative we are in with Marvel right now is it is in its struggle era. So where does Guardians fit in on that?
Well, and I think to your point, they need to keep succeeding because the story now isn't about the creative swings they're taking in the movies. It's about success versus failure. Like that's what Marvel movies are like. Did it hit or did it not hit? As opposed to like, was this a really good movie? And so I think that's why the real answer for this question, the saving grace of superhero movies, is Spider-Verse, I think. Spider-Verse has the chance to be like, this movie's such a hit. This type of creative swing is what the future of superhero movies in reinventing
or
the
Blue Beetle
genre.
Or Blue Beetle,
maybe, but like, and that looks like a good movie, but it still does feel like it's in the box based on the trailer of these other movies where it's just like a good version of this movie. I haven't seen it yet.
So. Yeah, and we'll see. I saw the Marvel's movie trailer a couple of times before Guardians, and that looks very fun as well. So maybe we'll see that these last couple of movies were an aberration and we'll move forward from there. Who knows? This is from Derek. What is your favorite genre of porn, personally? I would say horror for me. What about you?
Yeah, we got that. We know. Would you stop repeating yourself?
Horror porn.
Yeah, you're really into it.
I just shout at the screen until they do what I am asking them to.
Oh, Ted Lasso porn?
Yeah.
Where he's like, exactly. Hey, Pete, I know you're super turned on right now. Turn this off. You watched it 30 times, Pete. Believe I'm about to come.
Oh, my God. Dude,
I just have Alex forward me whatever he's into. Let me tell you, reader, it's some interesting stuff.
Yeah. Here's one that I think is maybe going to be the biggest fight we're going to have on the podcast tonight. This is from Nelson Kelso. Big fan of Sweet Tooth and the podcast. Just curious, which candies almost made the list,
This show's already running long. Come on, dude.
Maybe what the fuck? Let's get into a discussion about this. Assholes were like, I'm sick of candy. I don't fucking like the idea of candy anymore.
First off, don't spoil the end of our Candyman podcast.
No, it's already
secondarily, we had a fight about Warheads that I couldn't have contemplated having with any people in my entire life. He refused to eat Warheads like it was
Warheads
eating...
fucking suck!
Yeah. It's candy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't know. I think we texted each other a bunch of lists of candies, and ultimately Pete was like, only wanted to eat chocolate for the most part. You have strong feelings about candy.
Yeah, surprise. Wow. I have strong feelings about things. So, yeah, I also have a problem with candy. Mm-hmm. And, so I had some strong opinions about the different kinds of candy. And then these guys weren't into it. They're like, man, I don't know. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't think it was much like Warheads was the biggest fight in season 3 of the Sweet Tooth podcast. But I think mostly it was sending a list, particularly in the second half of the season, and being like, what do you think, Pete? Please don't fight with us. Just choose something so we can move
on. If I remember correctly, it was Pete sending a list and us being like, we've covered chocolate with caramel and nuts 5 times.
It's a different candy bar.
Yeah. The maple syrup, that's the spoiler for the last episode, is we chug straight maple syrup from the jug. If you want to call it that.
That was
a little bit of a fight, whether that's candy or not. And ultimately, you ended up loving it, Pete. So
I did, but it's not a candy.
Yeah.
No. Tell your tongue that. Tell your tongue that, Pete.
I wanted Rolos.
This is from Comics with Kids, the Comics Corner Box. Do you think there could be a cowboy comic book revival since shows like Yellowstone are so popular? Great question.
I think that's a great call,
and I would love that. I would love just some, I mean, you could do it in superhero genre with someone like Jonah Hex, a character that I'm surprised we haven't seen more of in light of Yellowstone. Someone at DC wants to hit that up. I think we're ready for it. Or things like East of West, where we get sort of like interesting takes on the Western genre, using the Western genre in different ways.
Well, the thing that's, I think actually kind of, this episode is wild. The thing that's kind of interesting about this actually is you would think, and there certainly have been Western comics, but you think the sort of thing that Yellowstone is, which is soap opera, would lend itself to comics because comics are also essentially soap opera. But I think comics have become more premise driven, like we were talking to Bendis and Obing about a little bit. They've kind of moved on from that a little bit in a certain way. That said, I do think somebody doing like a Jonah Hex thing where he settles down on a ranch or something like that would do very well.
I love Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to shout out a recent one, there was the Grootfall issue of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
That
great
was
call.
Western. I don't know if that's going to continue with further issues, but if you got a Western hankering, you can check that out.
That issue did feel like it was setting up the next Guardians arc. And that issue, while is also Western, it is so much Firefly/Serenity that if you like those books, get it.
This is from Derek Mainhart. Audience question. What are some of your favorite audience questions?
Great stuff.
Oh, man. We've had
some
checking
great... in with Alex's porn habits.
Yeah, there you go.
This is from Prime Energy. Is there a Image or Boom comic you would want next to be adapted for a movie or streaming?
Oh man, yeah, like any of the Image books. Image and Boom have been killing it. They've just been cranking out such really creative, amazing stuff, and the art is just absolutely spectacular. So yeah,
one really of the things that I've been really loving from Boom that I would love to see as a TV show someday is they have these comics about a character called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh my God. They've been doing a really good job, and it would be really cool as a TV show.
You have been loving the Buffy reboot stuff. Yeah, Buffy reboot.
But I actually want to say it. I know they are adapting this for TV. Something is Killing the Children is the main thing for Boom that I'm like, very excited song. For.
Let me get that. Is it Nails? The what is the that Texas Blood Shouts? Or sorry, Rain.
Mm.
The Joe Hill comic, the comic based on the Joe Hill story.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. And let's see. Comics with My Kid says, is it a bad idea to ask about LinkedIn when asking an audience question?
Oh, fire!
Deep cut. Hit it, Alex. Gotta tell the story.
Sure. So the story is this is back when we were doing the live show.
Do we have time to get into this?
Do the short version of this.
Oh my God.
We were doing the live show. The
show is already so long. And
yeah, no, I know, but we're going to go 3 to 4 hours for this one.
Wow.
we were doing the live show and somebody stood up and was like, hey, I have a question. Why haven't you responded to my request on LinkedIn yet? And it was somebody who had applied to a job that I was hiring for.
I think it's this person.
Oh my God. It's definitely not. But it was somebody who had applied to a job that I was hiring for who came to the live show to find out why I was not hiring her for a job. But how did she frame it up? Because it was definitely like, we all thought I was about to be implicated in some sort of sex scandal or something like that.
It was very much like Jacques Hughes.
Yeah. She was like, I have something to ask you.
I think it was something like, why haven't you hired me, Alex? I hit you up on LinkedIn. Like, it was like a very, I thought you were going to lose your mind.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was the craziest thing ever. And I ended up talking to her after, and I was like, this is why I don't respond on LinkedIn. And just for, so everybody knows, I don't use LinkedIn. Like, I pop it there all the time. I'm on there like constantly all day long. But anyway, that is it for your audience questions.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. We're going to move on to the next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. Well, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Normally, it's a time where we will give someone a gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's for some reasons. But I thought this could be a fun time where we could donate the money and I could just do a little making fun of Justin for a little bit. You know what I mean? Just some shots.
By the way, real quick, Derek asks, why haven't you responded to my request on Tinder? That's because you haven't sent me any horror porn yet, Derek.
Ah, that's a good quote. That's a good point. So I thought I could play the part of me doing the trivia, and then I could also be Justin answering the trivia questions. I thought that would be a fun.
It is far too late in the night for me to understand what you're talking about, but take it away.
All right, great. All right, so here we go. Today's trivia is a topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Harry Belafonte. R.I.P. Please listen to all three options. Before making your selection, here we go. Question number one. On June 20th, Tom King will come out with this number one DC comic. Is it A, Penguin, B, Used to Be My Venom, or C, A Toe for Grace? All right, we're going to go to Justin for this one. Yo, what's up? I'm JT Sis. I don't know if you can tell by my cool background. I got a Christmas tree and a rake back here. What's up? Ah, man, I'm so busy from being out on the road. You know, I'm a line producer most of the day. I see what you did there with the Spider-Man ref, because I'm a nerd too. It's A, though, obviously.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is the concept here that you're both doing the trivia?
I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, I wasn't here for a second. That was JT Sis. talking.
This is about crazier than when Kevin uses a puppet to do.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Yeah. The other guy misspoke when he said this episode was wild. All right. Here we go. Question number two. What is being Justin? Question number two. What is being teased that will happen in the Quiet Council in the upcoming Immortal X-Men number 12? Is it A, it will erupt in violence? B, it will finally start to deal with the infrastructure issues on this island? Or is it C, Adam Driver? All right. Oh, man. First off, I love what they're doing. And obviously, it's A, because I'm an island boy! I'm an island boy!
Oh, my God.
Number three, IDW is coming out with a horror comic on June 14th. Written by whom? Is it A, Steve Niles, B, Laura Stop Shaving, or C, Laura Harrier? Oh, man. Oh, I was gonna, I see what you did there, man. And also the comic is called Burn More. Got you, Pete. Stay away from Wells, kids. Thank you. All right.
Wait, is it done?
It's done.
I mean, it's not done. It's never done.
It's never done.
That piece of paper was real right there that you held up. I love it.
That's great. Did
I Justin stole my niece's art supplies to make that background.
Shouts to Ramsey Hassan. This is Pete's Joker moment.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not quite sure what just happened, but assuming that I do understand, first of all, what was the secret movie or TV show you were referencing,
Pete? Oh, thank you for asking. I was talking about the 2018 hit Black Klansman.
Oh, nice.
And what would you like to donate to, Pete?
Oh, I don't know.
I think you mean to ask Justin.
Yeah, I would say we support the Writers Guild, you know, throw some money over there.
Let's buy some pizzas for them.
We could buy two pizzas.
Yeah,
two pizzas. Or some Long John Silvers. They would love that.
Oh, they probably would.
Fish on the line. Fish on the line.
Hey, anybody want these fish sticks these guys bought?
They're loose fish sticks. You like that, right, writers? And here's the thing. They love it. They don't care. They got no morals. They're hungry. The writers, they don't got any money. They're going to eat fish sticks off the floor if they want to. You know what I'm talking about? I work for a studio.
Yeah,
All know, new comic books come out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out this week?
I'm looking forward to the Sandman Universe Nightmare Country, The Glass House number 2.
Wow. Look at you, Pete.
You've changed. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Great question. I mean, shouts to Murder, Inc. from our
Murder, Inc. for sure.
Yes, on the show. But I also want to shout out a comic. You know, I've been liking, there's two Iron Man books that are coming out tomorrow. the Invincible Iron Man number 6 by Jerry Duggan, and the Dukes, and I'm Iron Man number 3. I feel like Iron Man was overexposed naturally because of the MCU, but these two books are really putting a nice little package together for Iron Man in the Marvel Universe, so please check those out.
Yeah, I've definitely been enjoying I Am Iron Man in particular, which is telling some fascinating done-in-one stories. I'll give a shout-out to Miracle Man number 5, a book that I'm just fascinated to check out in terms of the development of it, like we've been talking about. Also, this is already out, so I'll give a shout out to this, but Green Lantern number 1, which is basically like Top Gun Maverick, but set in the DC universe.
Oh man, that's what I had in mind.
I'm sorry. Well, you might hear very similar things on the Stack podcast, which will have all of these reviews and many more books Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and also in the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Rodney Barnes for coming on.
Yes.
Dracula.
Legend.
Such a legend. Also, other legends, Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oving for talking about Dark Horse Comics, Murder, Inc., Jagger Rose, or Jaeger Rose, if you prefer. Definitely check it out. That's coming out tomorrow. Yes. Next week on the show, Asa Wheatley is going to be here to talk about Saga of the Shield Maiden and Jason Copland, maybe? is going to be here to talk about Zoop's Full Tilt. Also, a bunch of podcasts you can check out. Candyman, as we mentioned earlier. Our Sweet Tooth podcast just finished season 2. We did an interview with showrunner Jim Mickle. He chose the winner of our Syrup Cup. It was very fun to chat with him again. Fun. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. We just put up a required reading episode all about All-Star Superman, where we talked about that for an hour. That was very fun. And Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We talk about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Our spoiler review went up. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is posting weekly. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, good everybody.
I gotta put my kids to bed. Comic Book Club.